everyone have a good daylight savings, I guess. Hopefully everyone got up at the right time. If not, this is one of those days that if you forgot and you missed, you were here to church an hour early, which isn't a bad thing. So good to see you here. Joel mentioned something at the very beginning of our worship service. He brought up some church history to remind us that we actually have a lot to celebrate, actually yesterday, today, that it's Reformation Day, at least yesterday was. And so it is the day that we celebrate that Martin Luther nailed the 95 Theses onto the castle door. The part that he didn't mention is after he had pounded the thesis into the door, they opened the door, they gave him candy. So that's a little different. So just so that you know, perfectly fine to go out and the passage, jumping from that to this, we're looking at Genesis chapter 45 today. So if you have your Bible, go ahead and pull it out. And we've been going through the life of Joseph. And one of the things that hopefully stands out to you is Joseph is a man who's had ups and downs in his life. That's actually not very accurate. He's had a lot of downs all at one time, and he's had a lot of ups all at one time. You know, like all this terrible stuff has happened to him, and then all this really amazing stuff has happened to him. And so when we get to chapter 45, chapter 45 is the culmination of everything that his life has been about. Now, Joseph acknowledges and he understands that all of the bad things and all the good things that are happening have basically been for this reason. He's met with his brothers again, and he realizes that it's God's purpose to save the family, that God has put him in a position to be able to help and bless his people. And so what we have here in chapter 45 is we have this beautiful picture of God's amazing grace. It's a wonderful picture of how God works and what God does. And we see in this chapter, we see God and God's grace working in and through Joseph. You know, very powerful picture of how Joseph's life is for God's purpose. What's interesting to me when I get to this chapter is Joseph has essentially changed roles. In his life, especially this tail end of his life, he goes from being someone who is simply a recipient of grace. In other words, God has poured these massive amounts of blessing into his life. He's gone from, you know, being in prison to now holding the second highest position in all of Egypt, which is the most powerful country in the entire world at this time. So God has done all these wonderful things, and Joseph at this point goes from being a recipient to a giver of God's grace. And that's a very important shift. You know, even if you take out the spiritual aspect, there's something very unique that happens when you go from a receiver to a giver. So for instance, you have someone who, you know, goes through school and they have a tough time in school, they study hard and they listen to, they go to college and they decide, I'm going to be a teacher. Right? So they go through all of the training, all the studies, all the accreditation. And then they go back into public school and they teach. And that's an amazing shift. You know, here the student has become a teacher, and now he has his own students. And it's an amazing shift that happens. He goes from being someone who receives to someone who is now giving. And that happens to every child too, right? I mean, when you're very young, everything is given to you. Your parents give you everything. They feed you, they clothe you, they burp you, they make sure that you're okay, they provide for you. And the really neat thing about maturity is at some point, for most people, they get to a point where they finally get to be the giver, where they have a child. And they begin to do all those things that were done for them a long, long time ago. And it's a beautiful picture. It typically takes time, and it takes, to some degree, usually maturity to go from being a receiver to being a giver. I think in our spiritual lives, that's supposed to happen too. We have periods in our lives where we are meant to simply receive grace, where God pours into us, where we are needy, we're hungry, we are hurt, we are victimized, we are struggling, we are suffering, and God pours into us. And every time God pours into us, it's meant so that at some point we pour out to other people. And that's what we see in Joseph. He goes from being someone who is receiving God's grace to now someone who can give grace to other people. And it's a very important shift that's happening in his life. It's a shift in which we see him forgive his brothers, and he welcomes them back, and he wants to be used by God to be a blessing to them, to benefit and to bless their lives. He goes from being someone who receives to someone who gives. And so Genesis 45 is a picture of what that transformation looks like. And so that's what really what we want to dwell on and what we want to think about today is how does grace work in and through us? How do we go from being someone who receives to someone who gives? What is that transformation? What is the maturity? What is the change that happens that makes us strong enough, that makes us capable enough then to be used by God to do his work? Okay, so that's the concept today. As we go through the passage, we're going to see three different elements to how grace works in us and through us to make us like that. First thing we see is we see the way that grace changes the way we view our lives. So that's the first thing that happens. Grace changes the way we view our lives. Second thing that happens that needs to happen in order for us to become givers is grace changes the way we view ourselves. You know, we receive God's grace and we see our lives differently, and that spurs us on to other things. And then the third thing grace does is grace makes us strong enough to give, strong enough to be vulnerable. So those are essentially the three things that we're going to look at today. First one, as I said, is what grace first does, grace changes the way we view our lives. Let me read verses 1-5, and actually we're going to be camping out in these first 5 or 7 verses for the most part of the sermon today. But let me read verses 1-5 for us. It says, "Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, 'Make everyone go out for me,' so that no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?' But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. So Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come near to me, please.' And they came near, and he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life.'" And then he kind of goes on for another few verses. He repeats the same concept. But what we see here is we see that something drastic has happened to Joseph. Now, he's standing, if you remember where we are in the story, Joseph has faced a lot of tragedy and a lot of suffering in his life. And to a large degree, most of it can be pinned on his brothers, right? I mean, that's the start and that's the reason for most of the problems in his life. Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers because they're jealous of him. They hate him. He's the favored one. And from that point, I mean, his life really does go completely down the tubes. He's sold into Egypt. He's a slave for a handful of years. In the household that he's serving as a servant, he's accused of attempted rape. He is thrown into prison, and he is essentially forgotten. And essentially, again, you know, I mean, everything that has happened can be traced back to his brothers. You know, sometimes families are wonderful things, sometimes not so great. And for Joseph, definitely not so great. I mean, he could trace so much of what has happened to him to his brothers. And we see that, we hear that part of the story, and you know, if he turned out to be an evil person, if the story went that he did all of these things to test his brothers, and at the very end he said, you know, he pulled his brothers aside, he said, "I am your brother that was, you know, that you sold into slavery, and you're all condemned to die," you know, we would all go, "Yeah, that makes sense." Right? It wouldn't make a great story, but we would go, "Yeah, that makes sense." And if he said that, we would empathize with him to some degree. We go, "Yeah, I mean, if my brothers did that to me, if they ruined my life like that, I mean, I could understand that." I mean, we say that. We say, "I could understand that. I could understand Joseph being angry. I can understand him being bitter. I could understand him wanting to get revenge. I could see him plotting and planning. And if he did this evil thing," for most of us, we would say, "I don't agree with it, but I understand it," right? I mean, that's what we would say. What makes the story interesting is he doesn't do that, and that's when he doesn't act this way, we don't understand it. You know, we don't understand that what he does is instead of being evil, instead of doing what's wrong, he does what's right. You know, instead of scheming and plotting and then serving revenge, what he does is he shows grace. Now, here is Joseph, and he has his brothers in front of him. He has them at his mercy. And at the very worst, he could condemn them to death. At the very best, maybe he could say, "I'm not going to reveal myself," right? "I'm just not going to let them know. Too many wounds, too many scars. I'll just let them be," right? But he doesn't even do that. He reveals himself. And then in verse 5, it's the pinnacle of all that's happened. He says, God sent me before you. Now, I want you to notice what's strange about that passage, that verse. Verse 5, he's explaining himself. And essentially, he's telling us why he's not angry. He says, verse 5, he says, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you. Now, let me explain something. It's really strange that he says that because God didn't do it, right? And his brothers did it. And all along the way, from everything we know, God never spoke to him and said, you know what your brothers did? That was me. You know, he never explains that. You know, he never says, well, you know, Joseph, you didn't see this, but here's what I'm doing to you. Never says that. But what Joseph does is he attributes the actions and the deeds of his brothers to God. See, what he does in his heart is he reinterprets the events of his life through a different perspective. See how he does that? He takes a look at everything that's gone on before, and he's reinterpreted it. For you and I, if we had gone through that, we would go through the picture again. We would run the entire thing in our heads again, kind of like it's a movie. And in the movie, in our movie, when we look at that situation, we would see us and our brothers. That's the entire story. You know, here I am going out to say something to my brothers. Do. There are my brothers. They pounce on me. They throw me into the cistern, and then off I go, right? That's the way we would replay the story in our heads. If we could put it up onto a big screen, that's the way we would direct it. That's the way we would shoot it, and that's the way we would see it. But what Joseph has done is he has reinterpreted his life. And now when the picture begins to play in his head, the story is not about him and his brothers. It's about God. And if you could put that on the screen, you would see shots where God is pondering and thinking about how he could accomplish what he wants to accomplish. And then it would cut away to the brothers rushing upon Joseph and throwing him into the cistern. You get a shot back to God of God thinking about how he could use all of that. God planning out a future and a purpose to all of this. And then a shot back to Joseph crying as he being, you know, taken away into Egypt. And a shot back to God of God saying, and this is how my plan would unfold. And you see, what he's done is Joseph has taken the story of his life, the things that have happened to him in the past, and he has seen it again. He has reinterpreted it with God as the main actor of the story. And you see, the only way you can do that, the only way this happens is grace. God's grace has opened Joseph's eyes to see that the things that have happened to him in his life are far bigger and far different than just him and his brothers, him and his family. And he's beginning to see more and more that God has been a part of everything that he's gone through. You know, it is an amazing thing, and it is also a miraculous thing when God becomes a picture of your story. None of us naturally do that. Think about that for a second. When you play all of the worst scenes in your head of things that have happened to you in your life, being on the playground, things that have happened with your parent, things that have happened with your siblings, things that have happened in your life, God is never a part of that picture. God is never a part of those images and those scenes. We don't naturally put God into the picture. And so when we think about our past, we get angry. We get indignant. And our bitterness grows. We remember the person who bullied us. Remember the things that our parents have said to us. We remember the ways that our siblings mistreated us. And when we look back into the past, we burn. And it causes those things to grow. Sometimes so much so that we can't deal with those people anymore. See, that's what normally happens. What normally happens is we look back at our lives and all we see are the things that have happened to us, the things that people have done, and that's all that the story is about. But you see, what takes place in Joseph's heart is he looks back at the events of his life, and he begins to see it from God's perspective. He sees it through the lens of God. And now, the story is about him, his brothers, and God. And you see, for some of us, that's the only way that you can biblically and genuinely deal with the hurts in your past. And you know, every single one of us carries hurts. Every single one of us carries pains. The work of God is not to make you forget that. The work of God is to help you see that God is in those moments too. And you know, the Bible tells us that God isn't just a God who waits on the other side, who when all the feelings subside and everything's okay, poof, there he is again, and oh God, there you are. So wonderful to have you back. The Bible says that no, God is the one who is the hand behind all the other hands. He is the one who is in the back of the scene and yet the most important person in the scene. And until you realize that, your heart will grow heavy and your heart will grow hard. But what grace does is it allows us to look back and reinterpret our lives through the lens of God. And when you can do that, then all of a sudden the bitterness begins to fade and the hurts begin to subside because you see what God is doing. And you know, for Joseph, that's one of the only ways he could ever show grace to his brothers. He has every reason to hate them. He has every reason to want to hurt them, and yet he does the opposite. Why? Because it wasn't their doing. There was another who was even more powerful than them, who had control of their lives just as they had control of his life, and he was working for good. And you see, when you begin to reinterpret life like that, when God's grace begins to touch your heart and you begin to see life that way, you begin to realize that that's the way life really works. You begin to realize the distortion is when you view life in your past and God isn't there. And that what's normal and right and good is when you can view your past and God is there. That goes to the future too. Have you ever realized that sometimes we worry about things? What is worry? Worry is thinking about the future, but a future that has no God in it, right? That's what worry is. So we worry about, oh, what's gonna happen to me if I have no money, or what happens to me if I have no friends, or what happens to me if I retire and there's no this or that, or what happens to me if all, what we're doing is we're thinking about a future that has no God in it. But that's what we do in the past all the time. We think about our past, and God isn't a part of it. And so it continues to hurt us, to beat us, and to draw us down. And what happens to Joseph is Joseph reinterprets the events of his life through God's perspective. And that is the only way, that experience of grace is the only way that he can show grace to those who have hurt him. He reinterprets the experience through a different perspective. Until you do that, until God's grace comes into you to help you do that, you cannot and you will not look at life this way. When you reimagine the things that have happened to you, whether it's people purposefully hurting you or whether it's just terrible things that have happened, if you cannot put God into that picture, then you will never learn to deal with it. You will go to your grave heavy and hurting and hard. But the minute God comes into that picture, your heart begins to soften and you understand. And that's where God is. God is in all of life, even in those past hurts, tragedies, and suffering. So that's the first thing. What grace does is grace changes the way we view our lives. And that's one of the ways we begin to turn from a receiver to a giver. Our lives begin to open up and we are now allowed then to treat even people who've treated us poorly, we are now able to treat them better because of that view. Second thing that happens is that grace changes the way we view ourselves. And I think this is just as important. If you go 5-7, we see this repetition. Verse 5, he says, Joseph says, "Do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and yet there are 5 years in which there will neither be plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth to keep you alive for many survivors." So what he's accessing here, especially when you go into 8, he mentions Pharaoh and the fact that he's been put in a position. What's happening here is he is not just saying, "I've been put here to save you," in terms of him being alive and him meeting them again. He's talking about his position. He tells them that there's a famine coming and that through the famine they will suffer. But because of his high position, he's able to protect them, he's able to bring them in, and he's able to care for them. Joseph doesn't just look at his past and say, "Oh, you know, here's where God was working." Joseph looks at himself and he sees that he is the product of God's blessing and God's grace. In other words, In other words, Joseph sees God's hand in his high position. Joseph never forgets that he is where he is solely and simply because of God. Now, that's an important issue also. You know, for Joseph, if he was like us, if he's like me, if it was me, honestly, if I had a really high position, which I don't, it would be really easy to go, you know, the reason why I have this position is, you know, God saw how wise I am. God saw that I was just very sensitive to his will and I would be a good person to be able to be in this situation, that I would be kind-hearted enough to want to help. I mean, I could basically take my high position and rationalize my successes and my accomplishments because of me. That's what we do all the time, isn't it? We rationalize all of our successes and accomplishments. We say they're because of me. My intelligence. Even if it's not something of your intelligence, even if you go, well, I seized the opportunity. Whenever we take our accomplishments and our successes and we attribute ourselves or our abilities as the reason for those successes or accomplishments, it always makes us more prideful. And in our pride, we always disdain other people. Those are the two things that consistently happen. The thing that we dream of success is the one thing that typically ruins most people. Makes us proud and arrogant, makes us dismissive and demeaning towards other people. That always happens. The only time it doesn't happen is when God's grace comes in. And when God's grace shows us that everything we have achieved and everything we have succeeded in has very little to do with us. That the reason why we are successful and the reason why we achieve to any degree is because of him and not us. And you know, Joseph could have attributed all this to himself, and he could have been very arrogant about this, right? He could have said, well, you know, I see how much you're hurting, and you know, out of the goodness of my heart, because we are brothers, I will help you. And Joseph could have lorded it over them for the rest of their lives, and they would have hated him for it. Joseph could have been demeaning. He could have said, well, it's fortunate for you that God loves me and God has put me in this position, and out of God's wonderful blessing of what he's done in my life, I will help you. That's not really help at all. Joseph could have dealt with them in so many different ways, and yet when he reveals himself and when he offers to help, he takes it as his responsibility. He says, this is what God has brought me here to do, and this is what I will do for you. And there's no arrogance in it. There's no disdain in it. There's no sense in which Joseph is lording it over them, and he sees that he has now been justified for all the things that he has done. They have been cursed, and they have been put down for everything they have done. No. Because God has been doing all of this. That God has set all this up so that I would be in a position to help, so that I would be able and capable and qualified, and that I would have the wherewithal to do something for you. And you see, the only way you can act with that kind of humility, the only way you can have immense success and not be a jerk about it, is if you simply see everything in you as being God. Only when you reinterpret your life with God in the picture of that too, do you then begin to become humble, even if you have great standing. Now, the Bible tells us very clearly that success is one of the things that can actually ruin us. We build our identity around it. We make it the reason for why people respect us, and we become proud and arrogant, and we view others with disdain. And the only ways we can detach these negative elements of success from success is God's grace. Only when God's grace comes in to speak to us do we then find our identity and security not in our success and not in our accomplishments or in our position, but then we begin to build our identity and our security in Christ, in his love for us. And until you do that, until that happens in your life where you have such an experience of God to realize that you are loved by God, not because of your successes, not because of your bank account, until that happens, your life will forever be warped. You will think that you are far more than you really are, and you will treat people far worse than they deserve. But once you begin to realize that God is the reason for your successes, that God is the reason for everything that you are and everything you ever will be, once you are able to admit that, then you can truly begin to love people. Then you can truly begin to serve people with no fear. And you see, that's an amazing thing that happens. That's one of the reasons why Joseph can go from being a receiver to now a giver. Everything he has is from God, so why not give? When success is yours, when everything you've accomplished is because of you, you become tight-fisted and grace never leaves. When everything you have really belongs to someone else, then you don't have any problems giving that back out to others. And so that's one of the reasons why Joseph turns from being a receiver to being a giver. Everything he has, everything he is because of God. And so he has no problem turning around and blessing others. Okay? That's the second thing he sees, second thing that transforms him. Third thing that happens is grace ultimately makes him strong enough to be vulnerable. This is the beginning part of the passage. And what we find out is, if you remember in the previous chapter, Joseph essentially says, you know, there's this whole kind of test that goes on, and Joseph says, well, whoever is found with this, with my cup is going to be condemned, and the person found with the cup is Benjamin. Brothers go back to the palace, and they argue, and they try to barter their way out. Judah steps up, and he says, no, my life for his. He says, I will accept whatever punishment, whatever, if you let Benjamin go. And Joseph is so overwhelmed by Judah's willingness to sacrifice that Joseph begins to weep. And that's where we pick up in verse 1. It says, Joseph could not control himself before those who stood by him. He cried, make everyone go out from me. So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. I want you to notice something. Joseph is overwhelmed and he begins to weep. Now, this isn't simply because Joseph is a sensitive man. He's kind of a mama's boy. He's one of the youngest out of all the brothers, and you know, he's just overwhelmed by emotion. Something else is happening. We're told that he weeps aloud, and it's apparently so great that the Egyptians heard. I mean, how much would you have to cry? How loud would it have to be for a whole country of people to hear about it, or the whole palace, right? I mean, this is one of those cries where his brothers were probably, you know, feeling really bad in the beginning, and then after a little while, this is kind of embarrassing. You know, Joseph, calm down and we'll get this worked out. I mean, Joseph is this is a massive thing that's happened. And then he reveals himself to his brothers. In the text, what we see is we see the brothers' reaction, right? We see the fact that the minute he says, I'm Joseph, they go, oh my gosh. You know, there's that sense of like, what is he gonna do to us? You know, we're told in verse 3, it says that they were dismayed. And again, that makes sense. You know, the brothers had sent him off to his death, didn't remember him from that point on, and then here he is standing before them, second most powerful man in Egypt. And the moment he says, I am your brother, I guess it's not quite like the Star Wars thing, but he says, I am your brother, and immediately the brothers go, my gosh, what might happen to us? And every bad thing they could imagine was on the table. Right? If Joseph said, I am your brother and all of you shall die, you know, that's completely, again, completely understandable. So what we see is we see the brothers are dismayed, and they're right to react. They're right to say, oh my gosh, right? The thing that we're not told and that we're not shown explicitly is in a lot of ways Joseph is the one who should fear. Joseph is the one he's the one that's been hurt. And even though he sees this wonderful picture where Judah says, you know, I will sacrifice myself for Benjamin, Joseph has no real way of knowing how his brothers are going to react to him. He has no real way of knowing whether down the line they're going to trick him again and they're going to hate him again and they're going to send him off. And so when you look at it through his eyes, you begin to realize that one of the reasons why Joseph went through all these tests, one of the reasons why Joseph waits so long and he finally can't hold it is because Joseph is afraid. He's afraid of all the possible things that could happen to him. You know, he's afraid of all the old wounds that could come up, all the new wounds that could result from this. And yet, he gets to a place in the way the story lays out, he gets to a place where he finally says, it doesn't matter. I mean, in his heart, he's saying, what if they don't accept me? What if they hate me? What if down the road they hate me? What if they're angry and they think I've tricked them in some way and that causes a different type of spite? What if they all gang up on me again? What if, what if, what if, what if, what if? He has a lot of things to be fearful of. And yet, despite all of those reasons, he says, let me tell you who I am. What grace has done in Joseph's life is it has gotten him to a point where he's become strong enough to make himself vulnerable to other people, especially his brothers. You know, there are a lot of reasons why we don't open ourselves up to other people. There are a lot of reasons why we don't share, why we don't bring out certain parts of our lives. There are a lot of reasons why we exclude parts of our history or parts of our upbringing from other people. And typically, the reason why we don't bring those things up is because they hurt. They embarrass. What will people say? That's actually one of the things that keeps us from truly fellowshipping is the fact that we have so many fears. What are people going to say if they find this out about me? You know, are people going to mock me? Are they going to think less of me? Or are they going to treat me differently? For Joseph, the thing that gets him through this fear that he has with his brothers is the grace that he has been shown to him by God. Grace has made him incredibly strong to the point where he's willing to become vulnerable. And you know, the way that it works is when God comes into your life, when God steps in, when he shows you who he is, when you surrender your life to him, you begin to realize that it doesn't matter what anyone else says if only he loves you. You ever notice that? You ever notice how there's a hierarchy in your life? The more important the person is, the more important it is that they love us. The more important someone is, the more important it is for them to affirm us. And you know, if someone who is really important and someone who is not important say different things, the person who is really important, what they say sticks. Right? What they say matters. When the gospel comes into your heart, the most important and the most powerful person in the universe says, you are an absolute mess, but I love you. When God himself says that, and when that really comes to rest firmly in your heart, then no one else can hurt you. No matter what anyone else says, if you really believe that God loves you and that he has given his life for you, then you find yourself incredibly strong. Friends and family can say the worst, but if God says the best, that's what I believe. And you know, that's actually one of the problems that we have. One of the problems, the deep-seated problems that many of us have as Christians is we really don't believe what God says. We listen to things our parents say, we listen to things our friends say, we listen to things our critics say, and that's all we hear. And we miss the voice of God saying, you are my beloved. You are my cherished. You were the one that I lived and died for. And once that voice breaks through and bursts into our hearts, we can never be hurt again. And you see, that's what's happened to Joseph. The gospel has exploded in his heart, and to some degree, it doesn't matter anymore what his brothers say or what his brothers think. And in that strength, he can finally be completely vulnerable. He can say, I am your brother, do what you may. See, that's the wonderful thing. A lot of people say, isn't the gospel just a crutch for the weak? It is. But it's the gospel that makes us strong. And in our strength, we become weak. That's what's happened to Joseph. He's heard this life-changing message of God's love for him, and now no other love is as important. Pales in comparison. And so now he is able to open himself up and leave himself bare. And it doesn't matter what people say. And one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, have we become strong enough to do that? Have we become strong enough because of what God says to open ourselves up to each other, to our families, to our spouses, to our friends? Has that transformation happened to us? And the reason why that's important is because you will never go from being a receiver to a giver until you can become vulnerable. You will never go from being a receiver to a giver until you are willing to open up your life. Because in your life, in the things that God has done in your life, that is where people, in the areas where God has met you in your life, that is what God will use to help you meet other people in their lives. If you want to go from being someone who is simply receiver, who's heard God's grace, who understands it, who's blessed by it, to someone who's now blessing other people, this is the thing that has to happen. And that's, you know, overall, I mean, that's really what this passage is about. How does Joseph go from being a receiver to a giver? Well, very simply, what he shows us and what the whole Bible shows us you cannot become a giver until you have first received, until God's grace has come into your heart and overwhelmed you. You know, that's exactly what the gospel does. Jesus comes in. And the reason why he comes and the way that which he comes, Jesus interprets his entire life as being fully the will of God, to the point where life on the line, Garden of Gethsemane, on the cross, Jesus understands that his whole life is simply God's plan. In addition, Jesus sees everything about him, fully God, fully man. He understands exactly who he is, and he has no fear of what anyone else will say. So what does he do? Jesus makes himself vulnerable. Jesus is strong enough to make himself vulnerable, to give his life for us. And once you receive that grace, and only when you receive that grace can you then turn around and give that to other people. Now, as we close, I know that some of you have not experienced that grace. Some of you have not experienced the gospel message in that way that begins to transform your life. And my prayer is that over the weeks and over the months, you do. How do you do it? You begin to see who Jesus is and what Jesus has done. And as you begin to see that Jesus is the perfect Son of God, who has become the perfect Lamb of God, and he has done this for you, as that moves your heart, that begins to change your soul. Having said that, I mean, that's essentially what communion is about. When we take communion, we are reminding ourselves that Jesus, the perfect man, became the perfect